Your patient presents with new onset chest pain, and you've just diagnosed a STEMI, that is, occlusion-based myocardial infarction, with marked ST elevation and reciprocal ST depression. How can you tell if the culprit artery, that is, the acutely occluded artery, has reopened? Is there a way to clinically tell if there has been coronary reperfusion of this occluded artery? The answer to this question is easy if the cath lab has been activated and the interventionist demonstrates reestablishment of good coronary flow on cath films after performing balloon angioplasty on the occluded vessel. But what if acute cath capability is not available around the clock, as is the case in many institutions around the world? What if instead of acute catheterization, you used thrombolytic therapy? How can you tell if your treatment worked? How can you tell if the culprit artery has reperfused? Fortunately, there are a number of ways to tell, including, number one, relief of chest pain, or at least a significant reduction in the amount of chest pain that corresponds to the timing you'd expect after giving thrombolytic therapy that was successful. Number two, significant reduction in the amount of ST segment deviation, that is, reduction in the amount of ST elevation and the amount of reciprocal ST depression that you see in opposing leads. Three, development of reperfusion T waves. The natural course of infarct-related ST elevation after reperfusion of the culprit artery is for T waves to invert, often quite deeply, as ST segment elevation resolves. Number four, development of reperfusion arrhythmias, the most common of which is AIVR, or accelerated idioventricular rhythm, in which the rate of this ventricular rhythm is usually in the range of about 70 to 100 or 110 per minute. This is faster than the usual idioventricular escape rate, that is typically between 20 to 40 per minute, yet slower than a fast VTAC. AIVR rarely needs treatment because most of the time the patient tolerates this relatively slower ventricular rhythm surprisingly well, and most of the time this rhythm is short-lived. So think of AIVR that occurs in the setting of acutely evolving MI as a good thing that commonly marks reestablishment of flow in the coronary vessel that was acutely occluded. The keys to recognizing AIVR are to remember the clinical setting in which it most often occurs, namely evolving acute infarction in which the patient seems to be stabilizing, and to remember the usual rate range for this rhythm, which is generally between 70 to 110 beats per minute. Not commonly appreciated is one additional form of reperfusion arrhythmia, and that is end-diastolic or late-cycle PVCs. That is, one or more ventricular beats that occur shortly before you expect the next sinus-conducted beat to occur. I think of late-cycle PVCs as a manifestation of a similar phenomenon as AIVR, namely ventricular beats preceded by a much longer R2R interval than might normally be expected. Key point. None of these four indicators, that is, significant reduction or relief of chest pain, reduced ST segment elevation and depression, development of deeply inverted reperfusion T waves in leads that previously showed ST elevation, and development of reperfusion arrhythmias, namely AIVR and or late cycle PVCs, none of these findings are perfect as indicators of acute reperfusion, but they do provide us with parameters that can easily be assessed. And when several of these signs occur together in the right clinical setting, taken together, they strongly suggest that acute reperfusion has indeed occurred. Final point. Does spontaneous reperfusion of the infarct-related artery ever occur? That is, even before your patient receives thrombolytic therapy, can the acutely occluded vessel open on its own? The important answer is that it can, and this probably occurs much more often than is commonly appreciated. This is essentially what happens with Wellens syndrome. That is, we recognize the telltale shape of steep downsloping of the terminal portion of one or more anterior T waves into an inverted T wave that occurs in a patient who recently had chest pain that has now resolved. At the time of the chest pain, the LAD was occluded, but the chest pain resolved, reperfusion T waves developed, and the LAD now has flow, although it remains with a high-grade stenosis. Our goal with Welland syndrome is to recognize that although the LAD has reopened, and by definition no more than minimal myocardial injury has yet occurred, this patient is at high risk that the LAD may reocclude at any point in the near future, which is why as soon as we recognize this syndrome, timely cath, much sooner rather than later, is essential in the hope of preventing a large anterior infarction from occurring. I'll conclude by mentioning that some patients, either before or after medical treatment has been started, will go through a cycle of culprit artery closure, spontaneous reopening, reclosure, then reopening again, repeating the cycle a number of times until finally some equilibrium is reached. It is important that we recognize when this is happening, which is why frequent repeat ECGs are essential in a patient who presents with this type of stuttering course. We are looking for dynamic, that is acutely changing, ECG findings, which when correlated with onset and offset of patient symptoms can be invaluable for telling us if the patient in front of us has spontaneously reperfused or reoccluded again, as might be suggested by recurrence of chest pain in association with recurrence of ST elevation. This type of clinical correlation with serial ECG changes provides us with an essential clue that tells us when emergent cath is needed.